You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast, The New BTKI Kids on the Block, Compelling Rationale for Non-Covalent Brutone Tyrosine Kinase Inhibition in B-Cell Cancers. I'm Deb Gordon, and I'm thrilled to be joined by Dr. Shazia Nakota, Assistant Professor of Malignant Hematology at Fox Chase Cancer Center at Temple Health in Philadelphia. In this podcast, she will be addressing the challenging issue of sequencing therapy in patients with B-cell cancers who develop resistance to or are refractory to covalent BTK inhibitors. Welcome, Dr. Nakota.
Thanks for having me.
So the advent of the BTK inhibitors dramatically transformed the treatment landscape of CLL, MCL, and other B-cell malignancies. Can you just take us back to what it used to be like before we had these and what it's really meant to the patients you see and how you treat these diseases?
Yeah, it is remarkable the number of new targeted agents we have that have been approved just in the past 10 years. We're seeing that compared to traditional chemotherapy, these targeted agents are not only improving survival outcomes, but for many, these are offering much more tolerable side effect profiles as well. So now we're not only able to provide better treatment options in terms of efficacy, but we're able to treat more patients who wouldn't have been eligible otherwise. So I think this has been very important to patients. We have the first generation ibrutinib, which has the longest follow-up data, followed by the second generation BTK inhibitor acalabrutinib, and then most recently zanubrutinib. And we see that even patients with very high risk cytogenetics, such as TP53 mutations or a deletion of chromosome 17P, these patients historically had had very poor outcomes with chemoimmunotherapy. We're getting very good responses even for these folks. For CLL, venetoclax and anti-CD20 monoclonal antibodies, another chemotherapy-free fixed-duration option. And there's some data comparing these agents either as doublet or triplet regimens with BTK inhibitors as well. And so now this has completely changed the way we're treating patients, where we're really, many patients are never receiving chemotherapy as part of their treatment, and they're only receiving targeted agents.
You're mentioning all the different options, combination therapies. I know that particularly in oncology, hematology, medicine is really an art many times. So how do you navigate sequencing these therapies? What do you do in your practice? How do you make those decisions?
Yeah, so, well, for CLL, we are now almost always using a covalent BTK inhibitor in either the first or second line of therapy. So how this is sequenced with venetoclax and obinutuzumab or rituximab is really based on specific cytogenetic risk factors, comorbidities, and the patient's preferences for route of administration. So if I have a patient who lives quite a distance from the hospital, they prefer being on an oral therapy, for example, or they prefer being on continuous therapy, I'll typically choose a BTK inhibitor in this setting. And typically those with high-risk cytogenetics like a TP53 mutation or DEL17P, or perhaps complex karyotype, I will recommend a continuous BTK inhibitor. Otherwise, venetoclax and obinutuzumab is often preferred by many patients as it's a fixed duration therapy, and it gives them some time off of treatment, which is very important to patients. But we know that in patients who have had disease progression after both BTK inhibitor and the BCL2 inhibitor venetoclax, we call these patients double refractory, the options are not quite as good. Standard of care options include allogeneic stem cell transplant in those who are candidates. Alternatively, we have PI3 kinase inhibitors, lenalidomide, chemoimmunotherapy. But these really don't seem to be as effective in double refractory patients. So my preference here would be to enroll patients in clinical trials. And I'm really hopeful that pirtobrutinib gets approved in this space. For mantle cell, on the other hand, the treatment paradigm appears to be in a bit of a flux here. Traditionally, these patients with classical aggressive mantle cell who did not have a TP53 mutation we'd recommend induction chemo with a cytarabine-containing regimen followed by an autologous stem cell transplant and maintenance rituximab. But now we have data from the Triangle study that supports using the BTK inhibitor in the frontline setting as part of induction therapy as well as maintenance as a autologous stem cell transplant sparing approach. And this is an option for medically fit patients who have a TP53 mutated mantle cell lymphoma as well. And historically, those patients did not derive that same benefit from intensive chemo alone. So in patients who relapse and had not received a covalent BTK inhibitor in the frontline setting, my preferred option is to offer this to them in the second line setting. And this is continued until progression or intolerance. Another option is R-squared or lenalidomide and rituximab. And in patients who relapse after a covalent BTK inhibitor in the third line setting, CAR-T therapy or pirtobrutinib are the preferred therapies. We have several trials looking at these novel BTK inhibitors in earlier lines and is targeted as combination regimens. So I'll always encourage patients to try and enroll into these trials.
You talked a lot about what the patient wants. And I think that's an excellent point to bring up. We hear a lot about shared decision-making, patient preferences. Walk us through how you have those discussions with your patients, how you use shared decision-making when navigating the treatment options.
Yeah, I think now more than ever, the importance of shared decision-making with our patients is key. Patient comorbidities and their personal preferences are vitally important when choosing, let's say, between a continuous oral therapy versus a fixed duration IV therapy. You know, the toxicity risks and administration considerations between CAR-T and pirtobrutinib, for example, in the third line setting for mantle cell lymphoma is drastically different. So I think having an upfront conversation with patients is very important. And I think a misconception for a lot of patients is that a targeted therapy has, you know, very little side effects, but more so it's that they have some unique side effects that need to really be considered in the setting of the patient's comorbidity. So in patients who have, for example, major kidney issues where tumor lysis syndrome could be a big problem, my preference might be to choose a BTK inhibitor over venetoclax and obinutuzumab, for example. Or in patients with, you know, major cardiovascular risk factors, I may not choose to do ibrutinib as part of their frontline setting. And the route of administration is very important for patients. We are now learning that minimal residual disease testing may allow some patients to have shorter duration of therapy, and that may change how we offer these regimens to patients. So this is a evolving thing for our patients too.
Do you find your patients generally want to have these discussions, or are they more like, you're the doctor, you tell me what I can do?
You know, I think I see a combination of both. For a lot of patients, they like having a regimen that's been tried and true. So a lot of my patients will say, I want the drug that's been used for the longest time, and we have tons of follow-up data for it. So that'll often be a scenario where I'll say, okay, we have the most data for BTK inhibitors. But on the flip side, I have a lot of patients who say, you know, I just hate being on therapy, and whatever you can do to keep me off of it, or whatever you can do to keep me alive the longest, you tell me and I'll be there. So I definitely get a mix of both.
Good. Well, what else would you like to say about the current treatment landscape and what we might be seeing even in the next 2 years in terms of where the guidelines are going?
Yeah, I think with all these new drugs on the market, I think we're going to have more questions than answers in the coming years, which I guess is a great problem to have. We don't know yet which patients will benefit more from offering these targeted agents in a sequential manner versus as a combination therapy. We don't know whether deep responses achieved by combination therapies lead to longer survival for everybody. And as we move these agents into the earlier line setting, how does this impact our responses in the relapse refractory setting. So we now have non-covalent or reversible BTK inhibitors that are effective in patients with prior intolerance to BTK inhibitors. But we still don't know how these are going to be stacked up against patients in the current treatment paradigm. I guess the good news is we continue to have newer targets that are currently being studied in early studies that hopefully in 10 years will be great options in patients with double refractory disease.
What are some of those targets? What are some clinical trials you're looking forward to seeing the results of?
Well, there's some interesting studies looking at ROR1 targeted therapies. We see some exciting data for BTK degraders. So these work in a different mechanism than the BTK inhibitors. I think bispecific therapies are really going to be an important option for patients who are candidates for it and have access to it. And we have a lot of clinical trials, and from my limited experience with these agents, they seem to be a bit more well tolerated than CAR T. And so that's something that not all patients have access to. So I think we have a lot of exciting options. I think the most important thing for me, especially someone who treats a lot of CLL and a lot of older patients, is how can we safely combine drugs? So finding agents that have favorable toxicity profiles and combining them in order to overcome potential resistance mechanisms is going to be the most important thing as we design trials down the line.
Thank you so much. That is all the time we have for today. I really appreciate the fascinating discussion we've just had. And I want to thank our listeners for joining us. We have 3 other episodes in this podcast series, all of which are exciting. I hope you'll listen to them. This podcast was brought to you by Med Learning Group. Med Learning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide CME education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I also want to give a special thank you to our supporter, Lily, who provided an educational grant for this activity.